Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Radio Havana Cuba, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. A group of Japanese high school students submitted 110,000 signatures to the United Nations calling for the abolition of nuclear weapons. China hosted a summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, which leaders from more than 20 countries attended, including India and Russia. The current shift in U.S. international relations was a major focus of the summit, with a general call for a multipolar world order. The countries agreed to enhance a multilateral trade system and step up cooperation on counterterrorism, security, and energy. 2 days after the SCO summit, China held a military parade celebrating the 80th anniversary of the victory over Japan. NHK Japan.
A group of so-called peace messengers from Japan have submitted a petition with more than 110,000 signatures to the United Nations for the abolition of nuclear weapons. 24 Japanese high school students made the trip to Geneva, Switzerland, to mark 80 years since the atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. On Tuesday, they met with the chief of service of the UN Office for Disarmament Affairs at the Geneva office, Melanie Rezimbal. The students showed photos of atomic bomb survivors and explained in English that many suffered discrimination after the war. They also told Rezimbal that it is becoming difficult to hear from the survivors directly because of their advanced age. They asked how countries could stop relying on nuclear deterrence.
The opposite of deterrence is confidence-building measures. And so the best way to build trust is to be able to speak to one another and to continue these dialogues.
A total of 2.8 million people from around the world have signed the petition calling for the abolition of nuclear weapons.
Chinese President Xi Jinping is stressing his country's ties to the global south at a major summit this week, as the rivalry between Beijing and Washington continues to escalate. China is hosting the annual summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, led by China and Russia. Leaders from more than 20 countries are attending the two-day meeting in Tianjin. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi are among those taking part. Xi addressed the Global South in a meeting on Monday.
The current international situation is changing in a complex way. There's an increasingly heavy responsibility for safety and development in member countries.
China apparently hopes to use the opportunity to strengthen ties with other Global South nations and display its bonds with them to Western countries. Beijing regards the U.S. as a mid-to-long-term competitor and aims to counter the U.S.-led international order. Xi and Indian Prime Minister Modi are said to have expressed an interest in improving relations between their countries. The two leaders met on Sunday on the sidelines of the conference.
We will maintain multilateralism and join hands to promote a multipolar world in democratic international relations. We will also contribute to the protection of peace and prosperity in Asia and the world.
China's foreign ministry said Xi mentioned the strained relations between the states. The tension is due to the military clashes that occurred in border regions in 2020, The president was quoted as saying the two nations should not let the border issue define overall bilateral relations. Modi told Xi cooperation between them is in the interests of the 2.8 billion people in their nations. His remark comes amid the deterioration in relations between New Delhi and Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration has increased the additional tariffs on imports from India to 50%. Analysts believe Modi wants to boost economic ties with China by inviting investments.
A summit of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization ended on Monday with the Tianjin Declaration, which calls for enhancing a multilateral trade system. The declaration says members will step up cooperation on counterterrorism, security, and energy. They will also maintain and reinforce a multilateral trade system and oppose any unilateral coercive actions. The international forum is widely seen as an attempt to counter the West's geopolitical clout. In his speech at the summit, Xi called for unity among member countries. The remarks were apparently made in light of U.S. President Donald Trump's tariff policy.
We must oppose the Cold War mentality, block-based confrontation, and bullying practices. I'd like to advocate for an equal and orderly, multipolar world.
Putin and many other SCO member state leaders are set to attend a large-scale military parade in Beijing on Wednesday. Chinese President Xi Jinping invited some of his closest allies to Wednesday's festivities, including the leaders of Russia and North Korea. The parade, held to mark what China calls its victory over Japan in World War II, took place in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. More than 20 world leaders took part. But those from the West mostly gave it a miss. Xi said the people of China stand on the right side of history. And he said they will continue down the path of peaceful development.
We must accelerate building up our world-class forces to resolutely safeguard our national sovereignty, unity, and territorial integrity.
He kicked off the parade in an open-top car. More than 10,000 personnel took part. And China's military hardware was on full show. Everything from drones to ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be found at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. On to France 24. First, press reviews on the Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit in China from both Asian and Western papers. Then a report on the U.S. airstrike on a boat leaving Venezuela allegedly carrying a large quantity of cocaine. Organized by Reporters Without Borders, major newspapers around the world blacked out their front pages on Monday to protest the more than 200 journalists murdered by Israeli forces for reporting from the war on Gaza. The Washington Post reported on the Trump post-war plan to develop Gaza into a resort and tech hub for at least 10 years. Finally, the Israeli press on the Freedom Flotillas heading to Gaza with emergency aid. France 24.
The summit in China, what do you have for us, Emily?
A front page of the English language China Daily here. It's celebrating Xi Jinping's global governance initiative. It also quotes the Chinese president as saying that, quote, a Cold War mentality is haunting the world today. The South China Morning Post is also covering the story on their front page. And they've got this picture here of Modi, Putin and Xi Jinping looking rather friendly. And that type of photo comes back a lot in the coverage. Meanwhile, in India, though, they're looking at the relationship between the three leaders, in particular how Modi and Putin shared a ride in the back of his limousine. Not all Indian papers are quite so celebratory. You've got the Hindu here. That's got a more critical tone. It accuses Modi's collaboration with Xi Jinping as a capitulation. And finally, from the three main countries here, the Russia press agency praises the warm welcome that Vladimir Putin receives, as well as the particular attention which was given to the Russian delegation.
What about the rest of the press then? How are they reacting?
Well, a lot. The story is in a lot of the other papers around the world and on their front pages. In France here, Le Figaro, again, with that same picture of the three leaders looking quite friendly. For Le Figaro, Xi Jinping has united an anti-American front in opposition to Trump. Let's have a look at Die Welt. Still here, the leaders almost hand in hand. Sky News is offering an interesting analysis on the friendliness of the leaders at this summit. They say that the summit is a show designed to rattle the West. The article says that the striking optics of the event is what people are going to remember. Quotes, leaders from some of the most populous, influential and anti-American nations in the world chatting, eating and laughing together. Now, quite an interesting article, bearing in mind all of the coverage from China, Russia, India and the rest of the world. And the New York Times is building on this as well with this article here. It says that the three countries are trying to signal unity despite their differences, and that the display of friendship is designed to offer an alternative to global US leadership. The article says that the imagery shows how Trump's geopolitical disruption has become a rallying call for many other countries.
This video posted by Donald Trump on his Truth social media platform purports to show a small boat being blown up off the Venezuelan coast in what appears to be an airstrike. The US president said the target was a vessel being used to smuggle drugs to the United States, and that 11 people were killed in what he called a kinetic strike. Trump added that the boat was being used by the Tren de Aragua, a Venezuelan trafficking gang that he accuses Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro of controlling, something Maduro denies. The United States has in recent weeks moved 8 warships and 1 submarine to Caribbean waters close to Venezuela, Washington says, to combat drug trafficking, even though most narcotics are smuggled to the US via the Pacific. Nicolas Maduro has accused Washington of planning a war against Venezuela and has mobilized millions of reservists for a national militia. Maduro did not directly address the attack on the boat on Tuesday, but said the US was coming for his country's riches. Venezuela's communications minister questioned the veracity of the video, saying it may have been AI-generated. US Secretary of State Marco Rubio, a longtime critic of Maduro and whom Venezuela accuses of being behind the hostile American stance, arrived in Mexico on Tuesday as part of a regional tour to address drug trafficking and illegal immigration. Rubio insisted the airstrike was solely an operation targeting what he called a narco-terrorist organisation.
There are also a number of blacked-out front pages today. Tell us about that.
Well, hundreds of publications are blacking out their front pages today. This is, for example, the Lebanese paper L'Orient, Le Jour, a full black front page. L'Humanité here in France, a similar theme, but they've got this message on there: at the rate journalists are being killed in Gaza by the Israeli army, there will be no one left to keep you informed. The paper features a long interview with Mahsa Husseini, one of the few journalists left in Gaza. She says it's a question of time before she is added to the list of over 200 journalists who have been killed in Gaza so far. And there's something similar happening in Spain with Info Libre. They have this pop-up message that comes up when you visit their website. Same message as on L'Humanité: at the rate journalists are being killed, there will soon be no one left. And all of these are part of a campaign by Reporters Without Borders here to protest the killing of journalists in Gaza. Over 250 media outlets in 70 different countries will be blacking out their front page pages and broadcasting programs. And now newsrooms are demanding an end to impunity for Israeli crimes against reporters and the evacuation of reporters trying to leave, as well that foreign press be let in. But apart from the Reporters Without Borders campaign, there's another very interesting piece on Gaza in the press today, and that's coming from the Washington Post. They have this exclusive article here on the American post-war plan for Gaza. The article says that a plan circulating within the Trump administration includes bringing Gaza under American control for at least 10 years, while it is, quote, transformed into a gleaming tourism resort and high-tech manufacturing and technology hub. The 38-page prospectus plans for a temporary relocation of 2 million people living currently in Gaza, either through voluntary departures or in moving them into controlled zones. Now, the plan is called the Gaza Reconstruction, Economic Acceleration and Transformation Trust, or Great Trust. It was developed by the same people who are behind the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, now distributing food inside the enclave. Now, the article goes into more detail about that plan, but it's well worth a read, Stuart.
Now, the Simund Freedom Flotilla coming up in the papers, but the Israeli press, how are they covering this?
Let's start with the Times of Israel. They're reporting about the Simund Flotilla and how it left Barcelona for the second time after having to stop for bad weather. Israel Hayom has a slightly different take in this article. It explains that the aim of the flotilla is to create a humanitarian corridor despite Israel already providing humanitarian relief. That's a quote from that article there. The Jerusalem Post, meanwhile, has this story here. It reports that Ben-Gvir has developed plans to designate flotilla activists as terrorists. Activists will be held in prolonged detention and denied special privileges like television, radio or certain foods. Now, despite the humanitarian nature of the mission, the flotilla would be regarded as an attempt to undermine Israel's sovereignty.
Those press reviews and reports were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. A report on the Simund Flotilla heading to Gaza with Greta Thunberg, the former mayor of Barcelona, and other dignitaries. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Israeli regime is devising plans to detain Greta Thunberg for what it calls terrorist-level conditions under the Swedish activist departed from Spain on Sunday from Barcelona aboard the largest flotilla to date headed for Gaza. The initiative aims to break the ongoing siege of Gaza and the humanitarian crisis resulting from the genocide. Thunberg is accompanied by notable figures, including Irish actor Liam Cunningham, and former Barcelona mayor, Ada Colau, as well as what they call the largest solidarity mission in history. On September the 4th, the day after tomorrow, dozens of ships are expected to depart for Gaza from Tunisia and various Mediterranean ports, including Greece, joining the flotilla, Simund Flotilla. According to the newspaper, an Israeli newspaper, the regime of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu plans to detain activists in harsh conditions, purposefully, and detention centers. Israeli Minister Itamar Bulveren has proposed, including several vessels, seizing vessels, to establish a maritime force for police operations. Sources close to Ben-Gvir have indicated that after spending several weeks in detention in harsh conditions, the activists would come to regret their decision to join the flotilla. He said, "We must eliminate their appetite for another attempt." Before departing from Barcelona, Thunberg spoke to Press TV about the flotilla's mission to deliver humanitarian aid, break Israel's illegal siege on Gaza, and establish a people's humanitarian corridor. She mentioned that over 26,000 people have signed up to participate in the mission, stating, "This project is part of a global uprising of people standing up." Thunberg added that when our governments fail to act, the people will rise, and we cannot stand by idly in the face of the atrocities and complicity of the regime of genocide in Israel. The global Suwon flotilla, made up of delegations from 44 countries, will be joined by more than 40 ships from ports in Gaza, Greece, and Tunisia in the coming days, on its route from the western end of the Mediterranean to the Strip, the Gaza Strip. Hours before their departure, boats flying Palestinian flags were docking at a pier in Barcelona, while hundreds of supporters wearing kaifas have chanted, free Palestine, and boycott Israel. In June, Thunberg was part of a flotilla on the ship Madeline, alongside 11 other activists. Still, they were intercepted by the Israeli authorities, the Navy, 115 miles east of Gaza in international water, where they received only water and food before taken to prison. Israel's foreign ministry said unauthorized attempts to breach the blockade are dangerous, unlawful, and underestimate the ongoing crisis. Thunberg, who was later deported to Paris, claimed that their activities were kidnapped in the international waters. She acknowledged the risks of their mission, saying that their goal was to reach Gaza and distribute humanitarian aid. Peaceful protest.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu most of the time, but there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this listener-funded program, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show, which is supplied without cost to more than 100 radio stations across the globe. And if you're listening to it on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. More on the U.S. military presence off the coast of Venezuela. An interview with Mike LaSouza of Insight Crime, which researches organized crime in the Americas. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Now, the U.S. Defense Secretary says Tuesday's missile strike on a Venezuelan vessel said to be carrying illegal narcotics will not be the last. Pete Hegseth told Fox News, "We've got assets in the air, assets in the water, assets on ships, because this is a deadly serious mission for us, and it won't stop with just this strike." U.S. President Donald Trump says 11 people were killed in the attack. He said the U.S. military had identified the crew as members of Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua, which the United States has designated a terrorist group. Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro, has accused Washington of trying to force regime change.
The U.S. making its presence felt in the southern Caribbean. President Donald Trump confirmed the targeted attack. The cruiser USS Lake Erie and the destroyer USS Sampson are among the seven warships and a nuclear-powered submarine either already in the Caribbean or expected to arrive there soon. But Venezuela believes the US military buildup just beyond its territorial waters is not just about the cartels, but also about regime change in Caracas. That's not surprising given Washington's recent rhetoric about Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro.
The Maduro regime is not a government. It's not a legitimate government. We've never recognized them as such. They are a criminal enterprise that basically has taken control of national territory.
Maduro says the U.S. presence means Venezuela is facing the greatest threat South America has seen in a century.
Eight Navy ships with 1,200 missiles and a nuclear submarine are targeting Venezuela. This is an extravagant, unjustifiable, immoral, an absolutely criminal threat.
Maduro has urged Venezuelans to join the military, saying he'll deploy 4.5 million militia to guard against foreign intervention. but security experts have cast doubt on the militia's military effectiveness.
Let's explore this with Michael Souza, who's Deputy Director of Content at Insight Crime. That's a non-profit think tank and media organisation that specialises in organised crime in the Americas. Welcome to DW. Let's start with this criminal enterprise, as Mario Rubio described it. Tell us about Tren de Aragua.
Tren de Aragua is a gang that was born in Venezuelan prisons and expanded throughout South America. And we've heard reports of the gang's presence in the United States as well. I think it's important to note, though, that the gang is really not known for transnational or international drug trafficking of this type. So it's a little bit unusual that they were identified as the group behind this boat that was exploded.
Okay, so it sounds like we're just talking about your common or garden criminals who happen to have boats. Why, then, did the president declare this group as a foreign terrorist organisation early this year? Tell us why he did that and what difference that designation makes.
The purpose of that designation was to both name and shame this group, which had been causing, you know, significant concerns for security throughout the region, and also as a justification for Trump's attempts to rapidly deport millions of Venezuelans from the United States. Declaring the group as a terrorist organization allows the administration to use immigration enforcement powers that it otherwise wouldn't be able to use.
How involved is the Venezuelan government in drug trafficking?
The Venezuelan government is significantly involved in drug trafficking in the sense that there is a system by which the authorities collect bribes from drug traffickers and basically everyone looks the other way. This is the way that Maduro is able to maintain the loyalty of the security forces in the absence of his government's ability to pay them basically decent wages. So they allow them to supplement their income with bribes from drug traffickers. But it's not accurate to say that the Maduro government is running the entire operation as some sort of hierarchical or vertically integrated thing. It's really a system of generalized corruption rather than a top-down organization.
How legal is it for the US to just see a boat and blow it up and kill everyone on board rather than seizing the boat and arresting the crew?
It's something that we're still investigating. We know that Trump has signed secret orders, so the actual legal justification that they are using may be contained in those. But I think the question of whether it's legal is separate from the question of whether it's advisable and whether it's going to be successful in stopping drugs from coming to the United States. Drug traffickers are very adaptable. If you close down one route, for example, the route through the Caribbean, they're going to find another route. And so, again, I think the question of legality is separate from the question of efficacy here.
Okay, thanks for talking us through that, Mike. Mike LaSouza from Insight Crime.
That interview and report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, and most podcast sites. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury, I'm staying in a house that's connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.